Okay, and welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron, www.thematthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, where you can follow us there. Is it called follow on Twitter? Is that what it is? Is it follow? You follow people on Twitter, right? Yeah, you go at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, you click follow. I still don't know any of this stuff. We're 162 episodes in. I don't know how any social media works. I just got an Instagram, and I still don't know how that works, but it's the greatest thing ever. You go to Facebook, you type in the search bar of the Matthew Aaron Show, you click like, you like us there. You follow us on Twitter, you like us on Facebook. That's how that works, I think. And then you go to Stitcher, and we're on Stitcher. You can listen to the BBC, and then you can listen to us. And then that's a combo. And then what else do we got going on? But the best place to hear us, of course, is you can download us at thematthewaaronshow.com or on iTunes, where you can leave a comment for me because I'm tired of getting your emails. Email, just leave a comment and I can get to it at any time. You email me and I could be in a bad mood or I could it's not great. We have a huge show today. Oh, and by the way, yes, 603 North Hollywood Way, Tay Chicago. Thank you, Arlene and Joe Montaigne, for having us, as usual. Mini deep dish pizzas, of course, my favorite with the sausage. It's fantastic. And then, because of my diet, yeah, I'm on the grilled chopped salad. But, whatever. Chopped salad's really good, though, too. And Joe makes the place makes ribs. They got deep dish pizza. They got Italian beef. They got Chicago dogs. You're set. You can have anything at Tay Chicago. Literally, I think they have anything. You can get Ethiopian food here if you want. We have a huge show today. You guys may remember from a few weeks ago I had on David Rodriguez. He is a fantastic director, and he made a film that we talked about a few weeks ago that you will be seeing this year at some point called The Last I Heard, which you heard the last few weeks about Short Term 12 and The Spectacular Now and some other films that I think are the best of the year, Before Midnight. This film is up there as one of the best of the year, if not the best of the year, led by Paul Sorvino, who gives and is with an illustrious career, the performance, I think, of his career. I mean, that's how good he is in this film. This is a film you have to see. Renee Props, who's amazing in it, she's also joining us today. The creators and founders of Tongle will be joining us in an hour. Tongle is a crowdsourcing commercial site we're going to talk about that is totally fascinating. This is what I think is even better than Kickstarter. I mean, I'm telling you, this is going to be the site you're going to want to follow. Because it's just, you don't have to put in money, it's all about opportunity. And that's what I love about this site. It's all about creativity and opportunity. But we're going to start the show with Paul Sorvino and Renee Props, because I'm so blessed and happy to have them here today. And by the way, also in The Last I Heard, Paul Benvictor, who's fantastic, Stephen Bauer, fantastic,
Michael Rapaport,
who is one of my favorite actors. I even watched his television series, The War at Home, years ago on Fox. My friend Chuck and I back in Chicago, we used to talk about how we're the only people watching, but we enjoyed it. I think Michael would enjoy that too. And then of course Paul Sorvino, also the fantastic father to the great Mira Sorvino. Is what a terrific actress. And then you have a son who acts as well, correct?
Directs, writes, acts, produces.
Man, you guys are an artistic, creative family.
In fact, Amanda wrote a movie called The Trouble with Callie, which we shot, which I directed and starred in along with my son, who produced it. Mira does a cameo. Amanda wrote the music and played it for the score.
Wow.
She's a genius.
It's a whole family.
Yeah.
How great is it when you do a family project? When you do with the family?
It's fraught with difficulty, too, because, there are things, there are cross currents in there that aren't necessarily always pleasant. But we did it, and it's there for all time. The Trouble with Callie.
It'll be out. The Trouble
with Callie?
We're going
to start marketing it in about 2 or 3 weeks.
How did you separate, because I'm fascinated by this, how did you separate your father hat from actor hat? Paul Sorvino,
really
the actor, Paul Sorvino, the father.
It's really a problem because, you want for them to do so well, and you, I don't know how easy or hard it is for them because it's, I'm a good director. I'm the kind of director that actors like to work with because being an actor and also being a director for the last 40 years, I know the process, I know how to do it, and I also know how to articulate it. So it's not just that I know results that I want, it's I know how to get there. And so when I direct, I'm there to see that they don't fall off the mountain. I'm a guide up the mountain. A good director talks little and watches a lot. But if someone's having trouble, I know how to coach them because I'm doing it so many years, and I've made a big study of acting all my life. I still do. So I'm not sure that my son was altogether happy once in a while when I'm, you know, working with him, but his results were tremendous. That's wonderful great. In the movie.
So The Trouble with Callie.
Michael Sorvino.
Great.
Written by Amanda Sorvino. Wow. A score composed and played on my marvelous piano. And Mira does a cameo.
That's great. That's great. Renee, I was going to ask you, because Paul brought it up as well, what a good director does. Now, this film is fantastic. I mean, just from minute one. And by the way, I told David this, and I didn't get a chance to tell you guys this when I met you, but you think it's going to be one thing. You know, when I got the screener for this film, I love Paul, and it's something I seek. We sought out, and I said, I got to see this, right? And I love Rappaport, and that sold me on it right away. So I said, okay, but this is going to be a mob movie. One of those budget
yeah.
mob movies.
Yeah.
Paul's going to be killing some people. Gonna be, all right, but I'm still in. It's not that. And it's a touching, and I got to say, too, it's the best film about American-Italian culture I've seen probably my whole life.
Oh, well, you know, a lot of that has to do with, I think, a shout-out, you know, to the writer and director, David Rodriguez. There again, I mean, he's like an actor's director. He's amazing. And also, I got to give a shout-out to our producers, Andrea Kelly, Kevin and Chris Kelly. We had an amazing DP, John Barr, editor Frank Reynolds.
Looks great.
Yeah,
looks
composer
great.
Jeff Zanelli. And then, of course, you know, we had a great cast. We had Papa Sorvino here. Yeah. He's amazing, you know.
The DP for that film is so good. You feel like you're in New York when you're watching it.
Right,
well,
we were.
You feel it, though. You know,
That is the marvelous thing in Woody Allen films. You always know that you're there,
yeah.
wherever you are, whether it's his Paris movie or New York.
Right.
And, you know, this became such a labor of love. We had it around for 2 years, I think.
At
least 2 years that I knew about it. And it was always, we were trying to get it made. And when we did get it made, I mean, it started out so well. It's like the first day, Rappaport buys me a chair. He buys two chairs, one for himself, one for me. You know those kind of tubular frame but expensive kind of chairs?
Yeah.
Which was really a very nice thing to do. And I had known him slightly, done a movie with my daughter. Mighty Aphrodite.
Yeah, Mighty Aphrodite.
And
speaking of Woody. Yeah.
Yeah, and where she won her Academy Award.
Yeah.
And then, so we got along grand. Then we're working with Renee, whom I knew, but had no idea that she was that kind of heavyweight actress. I thought she was just a nice dame.
Thank you, Paul.
And so she became my daughter. I mean, she really became my daughter.
You feel that in the movie. You do feel that. You feel that in the film. You guys have great chemistry together.
Well, the thing about this movie, the great director, my dear, Rodriguez. Dave is a dear friend and a great talent. I believe him to be the most undiscovered writing directing talent we have in the country.
I agree after seeing this.
Yeah. So good. And you talk about actors. You know, I had an experience when I did Goodfellas with the great Martin Scorsese. Scorsese and De Niro don't have to talk. They kind of move ahead, lips and eyes, says two words. It's kind of like that with me and Dave.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I'll if I did something, I kind of look at him and say, we'll do one more. Yeah. I don't think we said, in terms of direction, if he said 100 words the entire show, it's a lot.
Wow.
Because we have a simpatico. I know what he's seeing. I know what I'm doing. He knows what I'm doing. And we both know when it's right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, you're a very...
That's the best relationship I've ever had with a director.
Yeah, you had that trust. Really. Out of everyone you've worked with, you and David.
I mean, Scorsese's great.
Yeah, right.
And
no, you've worked with great
ones.
And he's
great with great with us. And he creates a phenomenal atmosphere. No question about it. As a director of actors, there's no one finer.
Wow.
But my relationship with Dave is like De Niro's relationship with Martin.
That's great.
We don't have to do a lot of talking. It's just there, and I feel so inspired. I feel like I'm safe. And the director's job is to make you feel safe. That if you do something stupid, ridiculous, tasteless, ugly, it's okay. It's all right. It's going to be okay because we'll do it again. There's no judgment. It's not judgmental. He's not the kind of director who you're saying, boy, I hope this gets by. You don't have any such thing. We're there to do it together.
That's great.
And you see him weeping at the end of a take, and you see him. We're all going through it together. I think Renee would have to agree that this was not like a regular acting thing. This was not like a regular movie. This was like we went there and almost couldn't wait to go to work.
You knew it was special filming it, right?
Oh, well, it was all so real. It was like just pouring out of us.
Yeah.
I think I've done one of my very best scenes I've ever done with her.
Yeah,
in
no,
in the park, on the bench, it is. Yeah. It is. You were a fantastic.
He was amazing in that. Yeah. What was so great about?
He's also great at that dinner scene towards the end with you. And I don't want to spoil anything in the film,
but
you two have a great scene near the end as well.
Well, you know
what's
great about Paul is every morning we would come to work and we shot this film in 18 days. So
can you believe that?
Yes, 18. That's what I heard.
Labor of love,
and which is crazy for me too, because David told me how much you guys rehearsed. Because Paul, you very much believe in
very much
the theater, and
well, what
and
I
rehearsal.
Said to him, and what I say to all the directors, is if I can get away with it,
right.
I say, look, if we rehearse this scene for 20 minutes or half an hour, we'll go much faster through the day.
Yeah, right.
Because what directors don't understand, most of directors don't understand, is that to start doing it after a blocking rehearsal, which I call a blockhead rehearsal, you're just telling people where to walk and where to sit and when to talk.
Time.
Now they've got to learn how to do it. And so you have 8, 9, and 10 takes. As a director, my average is 2 takes.
Wow.
Take and a half, 2 takes, that's it. 3 is a big deal. If I got to do 3 takes, I'm talking as a director.
You're pissed if you got to do 3
right.
takes.
What's three, right. What is this? What happened?
Yeah.
You mess up, the camera guy, with sound, no bad for sound. But what? Stay with it. And when you rehearse like that, nobody's afraid. And what happens is everything that's coming up is your best stuff because you're not scared. And those little gremlins that make the magic are not, the others got by, maybe we'll be all right too. Mm-hmm. And out they come, and then it becomes a twosome or a threesome where everybody is working off each other in the best possible way. And that's what happened in this film. I would say, and I shouldn't because I'm the star of the film, and I have no right to say this, but if you want to know about American acting, you have to see this film.
I'll agree with you. So I could say it. I'm not in the film.
Thank you.
It's great. It is. It's a great education on acting as well. And, I mean, that's across the board. I mean, outside of you two, Rappaport's amazing.
He's amazing in it. Everyone's great.
He's wonderful.
You have Stephen Bauer.
Stephen is something else.
Chaz
Olivia Panapento.
Chaz, who's done the show, and is I consider him a very big influence in my life. I love Chaz.
He has a great scene at the beginning. He's such a big presence.
He's Chaz. Yeah, he lights up the screen. Yeah, he does. He does, exactly. He lights
it up. And that's the first time the two of you have ever worked together.
Is that true?
The first time.
Wow.
And he said to me, I'm nervous. I said, why? Because I've been looking forward to working with you for years and years and years.
Absolutely.
And I said, well, man, here we are, just the two of us. We're just doing the thing. And I thought he was wonderful. I look at this film, I'm trying to find errors in acting. I don't. I'm a terrible critic. I'm so bad.
Sure.
You don't want to see movies with me. First of all, I'll tell you what's going to happen. Because I always can, if it's well written, I know what's going to happen.
Sure.
Because it's symmetrical, and I'm a writer, and I have an instinct for it. In addition to which, you don't want to see an ordinary or bad performance with me. Because you will not like it. What is he doing? I'm starting
You will
to
know when something's ordinary
to talk.
Or
I
bad.
Said, does he really? What is that? He's imitating an ape? What is that? And I'm terrible, and there's no mercy about it. But when I look at this film, and I've seen it 5 times maybe, I'm looking for the error, but it gets taken away so quickly there's no looking for errors.
That's right.
Because there aren't any. There is not an acting error in this movie.
That's good.
Not one. And all of it is full-blown. All of the acting is rich and full. That's why I say, forget me in the movie, okay? Just look at the movie without me.
Sure.
You want to see American acting at its best level, you come to see Last I Heard.
I would agree with that. I would also say the writing.
That's what made it easy. Is you, if you have a great script, David Rodriguez wrote it, and plus he's very calm on set. And then you have Mr. Sorvino every morning looking at me with like a wonderful sweet bear and says, "Trust the work, Renee. Just trust the work."
Yeah.
Now, and then you have the writing. You don't have to do anything. You just show up.
The acting was not hard.
Right. I met you guys, and Mr. Sorvino said it's one of the greatest scripts he's ever read.
Correct.
And so
it's the best role I have ever had.
Yeah, that's what you said. That's exactly
fact.
Right.
That's an
absolute fact. So what, when you read a script, and first of all, how'd you guys get involved with the film? You said it's a 2-year at least project here. How'd you get involved with the film? And when you read the script, what was the separation between it? How do you know this script's so great compared to the other scripts you read?
Well, how do I know?
Is it just something in you?
The first five pages will tell you.
First of all, I'm a writer.
Right.
A professional writer. And have been all my life. I've written a best-selling book on curing asthma. I was a very prominent copywriter in my 20s in the ad business. Mad Men, I know all about it. You know. So... I have a certain literary background and a professional look when I see writing. The minute I started to read it, my son had met Dave.
Yeah.
And my son said, "You've got to read this," you know. So he brought it to me, and I read it. And as I'm starting to read it, I said, "This is absolute dead on real." Now, here's written by David Rodriguez, and the Italian voice is as good as mine.
That's what I said.
It's as good as mine. I mean, I'm Italian, 100% Italian-American.
Yeah.
When I read this, I said, "How did he know?"
That's what I said to him.
And then I asked him, finally, said, because I was with the Panapintos all throughout my 10 years. I grew up with
them.
Love the Panapinto family. So he grew up with them, and every line is so Italianate.
Yeah.
And every line is, but beyond that, the writing, structurally, emotionally, things happen when they're supposed to happen.
Yeah.
This is a rare situation. When I read this script, I was weeping at the end. And I said, "Did you write this for me?" He said, "Yes. And if you don't do it, I'm not making the film."
Oh, that's the best thing to hear.
That was great.
It wasn't about that. I had to do it.
Yeah, right.
And then they had no money. And I said, "I'm not going to do the film." He said, "Then I'm not going to do the film either."
So then I realized
if I don't do the film, it's not going to get made, maybe.
Yeah.
And that's a crime.
Yeah,
I could not. Right. Frankly, first of all, I wanted desperately to do it because it's such a wonderful role. It's such a wonderful piece. Not just the role. I look at it as a writer. If the whole thing isn't really right, what does it mean to me? If it's all great and the role is great, you've hit the superfecta. I'm not a gambler, but
right.
Like that.
The trifecta,
you know,
yes.
The trifecta. And when it's all correct there, I says, "Okay, let's do it. We're going to do this on a ham sandwich, all of us. We're all going to do it on the, you know, nobody's going to make any money. We're all going to do it because we love it."
Yeah.
And I love it, and every time I see it, I love it more. It doesn't tire. This will become a film you can watch again and again and again.
Listen.
Because the quality is so high.
My 30th birthday is Thursday, and I'm like...
Happy birthday.
I have socks older than that.
And I go, "Am I really considering going to see a movie I've seen twice now? For my 30th birthday,
at Holly Shorts
on Thursday, and I think I may do it because I."
But you know why it's worth
seeing? It's just that great
because you're going to see it on a big screen.
Yes.
Here's the situation, if I may say.
Yes.
One of the problems with television is that it sometimes has people pushing a little because subtlety, real subtlety, is mostly readable on the big screen. Because, like, for instance, I'm not a big movement actor unless I'm doing a big old part. Like, I just played a big sheriff. Southern Sheriff was a lot of fun. I have a good time with that.
Not
a big role
there,
with a lot of stuff going on. So, I mean, he has an inner life, but he's got a big exterior, too. Now, Paulie, Paulie, that's the other character.
You're playing so many, you can't keep them straight. But you're saying that the big screen really captures
what
all the subtleties.
On a big screen, you can look into the eyes and understand what's going on. It also, of course, puts you under the gun because if you're not good, the screen sees it.
Yeah,
it sees it right away. Yeah. If you haven't got it, I remember my
camera
teacher,
doesn't lie.
Yeah, you know what Bill Esper said years ago? He said, "If you got it, the camera's going to see it. If you don't have it, there's nothing you can do to make them think you have it."
Yeah,
that's great.
So if you look at this film, not a moment of insincerity, and when you see it on the big screen, you will be very happy.
You know, and as a writer, too, but as someone who follows studio films, independent films, and, you know, I see so many films, I kept trying to guess what's going to happen in this film. I go, oh, you know what's coming up now. Never happened.
Yeah.
It takes another direction. Yeah, it was great.
When I told you I know what's going to happen, not in a picture like this.
Yeah.
On the waterfront, I had no idea.
Right.
Right.
In Casablanca, I had no idea.
Yeah.
These very great films, because they take you along so far, I'm no longer a director, actor, professional film artist. I am a spectator like everybody else, because it's taken me completely and led me on scene by scene, so that I'm not even aware I'm watching a movie.
Yeah, that's great. And Renee, what was your reaction when you read it?
I had met David Rodriguez on a project in upstate New York, and when I read it, I fell in love with it, but not for me. I was looking at it possibly to help produce, because I loved the writing. And he asked me several times, I think you could play Rita. I said, I can't. I can't play Rita. I was born in Oklahoma. I was raised in Arizona.
You'd never know it when you look at the big picture.
I'm not Italian. You're shocking me right now.
I didn't even know.
I'm not even. I don't have even a little bit of Italian.
Well, you got it going on.
Boy, you got it going in that film.
Well, you completely
convinced me. I'll tell you that.
I worked on the character, and I had the luxury of living with a beautiful family in Queens, the Panapintos.
Oh,
and Olivia Panapinto plays the daughter to Michael Rapaport and Andrea Kelly in this. And I got
what a great scene with Paul and the daughter, by the way, at about the 30-minute point. That's great.
Why don't you ask your daddy?
So I have to give the Panapintos kudos and also thanking
and
the
kudos.
Producers.
You're a great cook.
Yeah, and David for letting me live with them for several weeks and just absorb the culture and the people, and then the character came to fruition, and
it's kind of an attitude. You know, a character, you can't even describe it. But when it happens, as what Renee does, it's nothing to talk about anymore, because it's an inhabitation. When you are successful with a character, any actor being successful with a character, it is because that thing, that bridge has been crossed over.
Yeah.
Olivier used to call it his green umbrella. Apparently in a play at one time he found a prop that was a green umbrella, and that gave him the character. Mm-hmm. Well, whatever it takes to make you get the character then always does everything for you. If I may digress a moment just to talk about
acting.
You're
going to tell that story. Tell the story about Goodfellas, when you looked in the mirror and you found your
character. Oh, my God, yeah. Well, that's an interesting thing, because when I met Marty Scorsese, he wanted to see me about this movie, Goodfellas. And, you know, I read the script. It was good. And the character wasn't all that great. It was okay. It was good. But I would have said, dinner is served. I would have played a waiter in a Martin Scorsese picture.
Right.
Dinner is served. That would have been enough for me. So I go in and I dress the part. You know, I'm nothing like a gangster. People who know me, I'm actually a nobleman, Italian nobility. And so forth. So I'm nothing like
a
gangster.
You are.
So I dressed the part. I put on a black cashmere coat, and I put on the pinky ring, which I never wear in my life. And I put on, you know, I did the whole thing because I wanted the role so badly. I go in there. I'm looking. He's smiling like a Cheshire cat, because I can tell right away he wants me for the role. There's no doubt. He wanted me before. That's obvious. So he sat there, and I said, well, Marty, yeah. He said, I know what to do. And he said, yeah. Yeah, it's going to be great. I said, but you didn't want to pay me. He said, I'll take care of that. My salary doubled. So now that's very Italian. Now I'm walking out. And I say, I just bamboozled the world's greatest director. You haven't the slightest idea of how to play this role. Because when I read something, whether it's I have a knack of being a good actor, or my training is so excellent, I worked so hard being a good actor, that I know right away what to do. It rarely takes me any time to understand what I'm going to do. I refine it, and I put a lot of labor into every role, but I know what I'm going to do. I read this. I didn't have a clue. I said, I don't know how to play this. This is the kind of guy who says, these gabardiles are good. Kill that guy over there. Yeah, cut his head off. Here's the knife. So that's a cultural lethality that I'd never used, never knew I had. And so I went around 3 or 4 weeks trying to study where to get this. Well, there are technical pathways to emotion, to behavioral things, to all kinds of things, vocal things, physical things that an actor can learn. It's part of his training. But that interior thing, that thing that I talked about, that inhabitation,
right,
where the character comes.
Clicks. The green umbrella.
The green umbrella never happened. Now we're 3 days away from shooting. I called my manager. I said, get me out. I was despairing. I said, I'm going to ruin the movie and this great director. I'm going to ruin myself. I have no idea how to play this role. I can't find it. I was trying in supermarkets, figuring it out. You know, the externals. Yeah, middle-aged Italian-American man. Yeah, yeah, that's hard, right? Hello. Move slow. Yeah, hello. You learned that in 6 seconds. I said, but this feeling, this inside thing. And I said, I'm just despairing. He said, all right, call me tomorrow. If you still feel that way, I'll get you out. Problem is, you walk away from a movie 3 days before you start, they can sue you for hundreds,
sure,
of thousands of dollars because they can't start on time. You got to pay it. And they'll sue you just as quick as you can say Jackie Robinson, that great ball player. Now, I was despairing. In those days, we all wore ties. So I'm walking up to I had a dinner date. I was walking to the, I lived in New York City. I would go to the mirror, you know, just be in the alcove and straighten my tie. And this is what the audience can't see this, but I'll show it to you. And this is what I saw.
He's making a very scary face.
Jumped back a foot and a half. I jumped back from myself in the mirror. I frightened myself so. I tell you God's honest truth. I said, what the hell is that? I said, that's the character.
You found the character.
I found the guy. And from then on, it was just like a duck in the water, just floating around. It couldn't have been easier.
Oh, that's great.
So here's my point about acting. When you find, see, a lot of acting teachers teach about making choices,
mm-hmm,
and then this choice and that choice and the other choice. What are you going to do here? What are you going to do there? Okay, that has a value, but not until you've found the character.
Yes.
Now, they're going at it bass-ackwards, you know. They're really not understanding. It is the character who will tell you what to do. I will show you, and you can describe it to your viewers. If you say, Sandy Meisner, my great teacher, besides Bill Esper, used to say, if you, character acting, you stick a gun in the back of a ballet dancer's back, and you say, stick him up, he will do this.
If Paul's doing one of the ballet poses.
You know, I wish you ballet could poses, hands up in the air.
That one.
With the palms,
right,
and the fingers pointed,
right,
to one another. That's first position. So that tells you that once you find a character, your work is 90% done.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can go a little this way, a little that way, but you know. And for instance, once when a director says, I think you should do this, at a certain point, the canny director should say, I know you know the character better than I do. What do you think he would do? Show that to me. Let me see if that works. Because there's a certain point at which the actor knows the character better than the writer, better than the director, certainly better than the producer,
yeah,
because he's got it.
You are the character.
You are the character.
Right.
Right.
That's the essence of great acting.
At what point playing Joe did you know you were Joe?
The first minute I read it.
Really?
Immediately.
What connected you to the material so much? You're like, I'm this guy.
I don't know. I can only tell you it was so original and so familiar. You know, when you hear a tune, say, gee, I heard that before.
Sure.
May have not have ever heard it. It's just so great that it you think it's all been around for years.
Well, it resonates with your spirit. It resonated with your soul.
Right away.
You know? Yeah.
Because it was so true that you've seen this all before. I mean, not the story, but this kind of character. But in point of fact, as soon as I started reading from page one, I said, this is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I went right with it, and it carried me through just like when you see the movie, which carries you through to inevitably to the emotional ending.
That's great. So you knew right away.
Right away.
I'm Joe.
First two, three pages, I said, oh, boy, this is it.
That's great.
This is it.
That's
and I knew
great.
Exactly what to do.
You know, listen, you're so good in Goodfellas. I mean, a lot of people know you from that film. Obviously, it's a very, very popular film.
It sure is.
The most
popular film maybe in history.
But you're so good in it, you know, all my friends, I'd say, my good close friends are Italian. I'm Italian, from Chicago.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they believe you're that guy.
I
like,
know.
When I
Everyone
tell people
does.
Paul Sorvino's coming on, they're like, oh, Paul Sorvino.
You better be careful.
Right, right.
Yeah, who knows what's going to happen with that guy? You better be careful.
Oh, you know, he's the man of the opera.
He's completely the opposite.
He's the man of the opera,
opposite.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am the polar opposite of that gangster guy.
You're a sculptor as well.
Yeah, you're an artist.
You're a singer. You're everything, Mr. Savino.
I am many things. I'm also.
Are you a cook? Are you a cook as well?
Yeah, he's a great chef.
I love that face.
He has a really great character.
My dear fellow.
You have a great character, and you have to just do a couple lines. He has this really great character, and he's a gay chef.
Oh, no. Why do you say that? See,
it's a great character. I want him to do a show.
Here's the problem. What? No, what are you looking at me? Strangely, don't look at me. Don't even look at me, okay? I'm more comfortable if you don't. And I cook very, very well. I know what I'm doing. And I love to see people having a good time. That's all.
No, we named him. We named that character. We were working.
You named him.
Yeah. I named him. I'm like, I think it was Fred.
It might have been Fred.
Come on, do Fred for us.
Well, you know, right. You have to like the character.
Sure.
Or you can't really do him. I remember Olivier, the great Laurence Olivier, he was going to do Othello, and he was telling one of his friends, the actors, he said, I just find this so difficult. He said, you know, you have to whine all night and black up besides. And the guy says, well, Larry, if you don't like him, you'll never be good in him.
Oh, that's true.
He became very good in him, if you look at the movie Othello, which he does. And he was of a different form, you know, much more vocal, much more English. But because he had such a great spirit and such a perfect use of his voice, when you use the voice well, that's emotional right there.
Yeah.
And he had that. So even though he wasn't an organic actor the way we are, I trade places with him. I'll take that down.
Right,
okay.
Right.
That's all right.
You don't want Larry's career. No.
Renee, do you cook? Are you a cook too?
I do. I like to bake as well, mostly. Okay. But my mother was a home economic teacher for 30 years.
Wow.
So I didn't really.
So the baking you got down.
No, she wouldn't. You know, I didn't really learn to cook because she did all the cooking. I learned to cook much later in life. It became like a creative outlet.
Yeah.
You know.
It's relaxing, isn't it?
It's very relaxing.
It's very relaxing. Paul, you have a scene in this film where you're cooking, which is why I asked. How much of that's you and how much of that's...
That's all me.
It's all you.
Yeah.
And his recipe.
The recipe.
And my recipe. Here's the thing. Here's the thing. We had a discussion about this because the recipe that they gave me, the lines to say, I said, I can't. That's a Sicilian taco. Now, I'm not Sicilian. I'm Neapolitan and Abruzzese. And they wanted me to go on record of doing it, and then you put sugar into it. I said, so we're going to...
No sugar.
We're going to hypothesize that my mother was Neapolitan and my father's Sicilian. So I feel like a Sicilian man, but the ragu, I made it just like the ragu, Neapolitan ragu. You know.
That was a sauce. That wasn't a... It was a gravy.
It's a gravy.
My mother's family's from Naples. Tortorella.
Sure.
Tortorella is the last.
Yeah, I just got back from Salerno. I was at a film festival there with Mira.
That's great. You were speaking of my family. You were recently in my area. You were in Naperville, Illinois, filming.
Yes.
Downers Grove, right next door in Chicago, of course, not too far. You did Precious Metal, right? Is that what you were working on there?
Yes.
Did you like Naperville?
Film, huh?
Did you like Naperville?
Oh, it's a very nice community.
That's good.
I played a Southern sheriff in that one.
Not a lot of good Italian food in Naperville, though. You got to go to Chicago for that.
Chicago get plenty.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But so I played this big character, Big
Jack. That's the sheriff.
Big Jack Parnell, the sheriff. Now, what he also does, he sings in a honky-tonk band. But he likes to make everybody happy and keep everybody safe. But, young man, if you don't talk to me soon, I can't help you. It's a very good movie. I can't wait to see that.
Oh, boy.
That's great.
And Nick Jonas is going to surprise you. He's
really
very good. Yeah. Oh, yes.
That's great.
Isabel Lucas is the prettiest little thing you ever saw.
Lovely.
Well, that's great.
And Dermot Mulroney.
Dermot, who's a buddy of mine. He's a buddy of mine.
I love his work.
Tremendous actor.
He's great.
He's a great actor.
Dermot was on the pilot we shot in January. He was one of my guests. I love Dermot.
He's a terrific actor.
I don't know how well you know Dermot, Paul, but I like to tell people, he's not surprisingly, it shouldn't be surprising, he's one of the funniest people you'll ever meet.
Oh, yeah. No, I got some of it. I got some of it.
Yeah.
He was making me laugh.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. He's very funny. He's very sharp. I mean, Dermot does a lot of serious roles, so you wouldn't really catch on to that.
Funny.
But yeah, he's great.
He's got the Irish humor.
You know what I was going to ask, and Renee, you tell me if you hear people say this, because you were in New York. Mozzarella or mozzarella?
Oh, what do you
think?
The
Neapolitan or the Brooklyn accent there would be mozzarella.
Yeah, right.
Mozzarella.
Mozzarella.
Mozzarella. mozzarella. But now, as I when I speak Italian, I say mozzarella.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yeah. So one is the one
and
is
even,
the,
they
like,
even
the
say
Brooklyn.
Mutz.
Yeah, right.
We're gonna make the tomato, we're gonna get the mutz.
I say tomato.
You say mozzarella. I say mozzarella.
Yeah, I'm all about it. I've seen too many New York films growing up.
I don't know about mozzarella in this town. I haven't found where they do it.
No, in L.A.? No.
I haven't found it.
There's a place in Pasadena I go to. It's all right. It's okay. Aromas. Listen, you got to go off the beaten path to get anything Italian in L.A. And, you know, it's okay. It's all right. Are you a big fan of Italian cuisine,
Renee? I love Italian cuisine.
Where do you go
cuisine.
In L.A. for great Italian
you can.
Cuisine? Yeah. There's a place in Brentwood, Pizzacotto, that I really like, but it's more fresh seafood Italian.
There is a great Italian restaurant, Neapolitan restaurant
which one?
As good as eating in Naples.
Really?
Where?
Yes,
which
it's called
one?
Da Pasquale on Little Santa Monica.
Oh,
in Bedford.
Okay.
There
it's one
we
of the
go.
Finest restaurants in the country.
Really?
If I tell you that it is exactly like eating in Naples, they get all their materials from Naples.
Oh,
and
here we go.
And it's a Neapolitan family who came here.
You know where we're going.
I know where I'm doing later tonight.
30 years ago.
Oh.
The family. And the brother-in-law is a certified in Neapolitan pizzaiolo. That means you have to be certified in Naples to make pizza.
Yeah.
And it's not easy to do. You have to do an apprenticeship for years and be certified and all of that. They make the food exactly as it is in Naples. And I just got back from Salerno, so that's Neapolitan. That's
would you throw up a Domino's pizza, Paul? If someone put a Domino's pizza in front of you, would you just...
Well, if I just finished a trek, you know, of 30 miles without food, and maybe for 2 days without food, I might not question it.
You may look at his cheesy bread or something.
Go ahead here. We've got to get
You're
going to
go there. You just went there.
What's the best place for you, Renee, for Italian food out here?
Not in L.A., no.
No, nothing
no,
in L.A.
I,
literally
I
nothing.
Good, well, now I'm going to try this.
Okay,
because
yeah.
This
well,
place.
Marino's
say,
is pretty
say,
good, too.
Marino's. Okay. Say that again. Say the name.
But like Dan Tana's and stuff.
Da Pasquale.
Da Pasquale.
I had some great pasta at downtown.
Really?
Yeah, okay.
Dan Tana's?
I
mean, it's
Ago is pretty good,
it's
too, right? Ago is pretty good
Ago
Italian
pretty
food.
Pretty good, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I like going to Pasadena. They got good Italian stuff. In Santa Monica, there's that Bay City's Deli.
Yeah.
It's all right. You can't get sausage anywhere.
Nowhere.
Anywhere. Nowhere.
Do they have it? No. No.
Well, Ignazio Panapinto has
Roma's
brought
does.
Sausage. From New York.
Yeah,
he brought them on the plane.
Yeah, they got a German sausage joint in Eagle Rock. But in Pasadena at Roma's, they have sausage. That's why I go there.
Mm-hmm.
The Bay Cities, they start carrying sausage. It's like it looks like a breakfast sausage.
Yeah.
It's a little mutated. That's all. It's nothing.
Mutated sausage.
Yeah,
that's nothing
funny
special.
Line. That's a funny line.
Yeah.
It is.
It's nothing special. But, you know, so you can't get great Italian
well,
food
there,
out here.
You know, there are a couple of wonderful Italian restaurants, though. Northern cooking, but they're tremendous.
Yeah.
Il Pastaio
okay.
is very good. Piccolo Paradiso in Beverly Hills.
Okay.
On Beverly, that's
now.
A superb restaurant.
Okay.
All of the Celestino Drago restaurants are very good.
You're going to make me go back and listen to one of my shows for once, because I never re-listen to my shit. You never? Do you watch your movies over
no,
and over?
No.
Do you watch
once.
Your films?
Once.
Once. You see it once. And that's how you know this film's great, the last third. You see it five times.
Yeah.
Paul only sees his movies once, and
once.
Then he can't
that's
take
right.
them anymore.
That's
He's like,
right.
all right. Do you pick it apart? You guys pick your
There's
stuff
nothing
apart,
nothing to
right?
pick apart here, I
But
promise
nothing
you.
Here. But I mean,
it doesn't exist here,
and that's the difference between the other movies and this.
It is fine a movie as I have ever made.
Oh,
it's as good technically as Goodfellas.
Yes,
it's acted on that level.
No, I agree,
and it is. You know, there's. I have nothing to say.
I agree, and I don't BS on the show. Like, first of all, we set out to get the guests I really want to get on the show. I don't ever have on people. That, like, publicists try to force on me and stuff. And this isn't
right.
a publicist forcing. I hit up David.
You sought us out.
Right,
Thank
right.
you. Thank
because
you
this
so much.
Film is so amazing.
Aww.
And that, I mean, so I think our listeners trust me enough to know when I say this is one of the top films of the year, it's to be seen. Holly Shorts on Thursday, people got to come by. What time is it? Is it at...
It's at 5:30.
Okay. Everything is on the website. You can buy tickets there in the events section on our
it's
website.
It's in Hollywood.
Yes.
At the Grauman's Chinese. Or they call it Man's or Grauman's now? back to Grauman,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, is it Grauman?
Grauman's Chinese.
And the name of the film is Last I Heard.
Last I Heard. It's so great. Paul, you just moved out here, right? For,
no, I've
like,
been living
full-time?
Here for 5 or 6 years, but
okay.
I've had an apartment here almost 20 years.
Okay, so you
I've
would come
coastal.
Back
by
and
coastal.
Forth, but now you're out here.
I lived
here.
Out here the last 5 years, yeah.
Yeah, 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 okay, that's great. So do you like living out here, or you need New York, right?
I need my fix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every few months I need my fix, because as we all know, New York is the cultural, intellectual, financial capital of the world.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a ballerina talks with a garbage man, the garbage man talks with a stockbroker,
yeah.
And this flux that they create, this kind of slurry that they all create, creates a society that is informed, hip, smart.
Stimulating.
And stimulating. And so you just walk in a New York street, it's a whole other world. However, that's it. I play tennis a lot, so out here
so
I go.
So you get the tennis here.
I play three times a week.
Can't beat the
no,
weather.
I just go there, get in the thing, and go.
I love tennis. Are you any good? Are you
I
any
was
good?
At one time a 5-5 five player.
Okay, wow.
Which is just under a pro.
Yeah.
At one time, I had 140 mile an hour serve.
Woo!
I don't have that now, but
man.
I still play pretty well.
You had someone clock that serve?
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm a very still for my age a very good player.
All right, I thought I was going to be able to play you. Never mind, I changed my mind. I don't need any wealth
come on
this.
You
spot.
Can
I'm pretty
do
good
it.
Player. I'm pretty good.
I believe it. I believe it. Yeah. Wow, that's wow. Because I always knew you as a New York guy. I mean, going all the way back to Law and Order when
right.
you did Law and Order,
right.
And I think I remember when I was growing up, because I always followed you, and when I was growing up and you left Law & Order, I heard it was over the weather.
It was.
Is that true?
I mean, well, it's partially
your voice,
that,
right?
And partially that, and partially that there's nowhere to act in it.
No,
there's
it's
nothing to
it's
act.
It's a procedural.
I mean, how much can you do with what did you see after you came out of the coffee shop?
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's pretty much what you're doing in every episode, and I just found it stultifying artistically. And the weather, they didn't even want me to wear a hat. I pretty much said, screw you.
Yeah.
I said, and I wore a hat always, because the month after I left it, Chris Noth got pneumonia.
Yeah. Oh,
because
wow.
you're in and out of very
He's
cold.
A great actor,
great
Chris
actor.
Noth.
Marvelous
great
actor.
Great actor.
You're in and out of like 18-degree wind chill, and back and then in a warm and hot thing. You're in and out of it all day, and it's very debilitating.
Do you guys feel like there are less great films being shot in New York nowadays?
Oh, sure.
Right?
Yes.
Right? I feel like...
There must be
what
great films made anywhere.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
Yeah, what happened? Paul brought up before how, you know, you can be very critical when he sees acting, and he talks about Sandy Meisner and all your teachers. And
yeah, I studied with Stella Adler.
See? And you studied with Stella. So I feel like a lot of the talent that comes out today... you know, they get the money and they make a film,
that's
but there's no training. There's no training.
And if there is, they abandon it somehow.
Yeah.
My feeling is I've watched some people shoot up like comets and then fall down like the fireworks, you see.
Yeah, it happens a lot.
It's almost like in my day, we wanted to be great actors. We did not want to just be in movies. In fact, we weren't even interested.
And
in
we didn't even care about being famous. We
had
loved
nothing
the craft
to do with it.
And it started in theater.
Had nothing
you know?
To do with it.
Nothing to do with
we're
it.
We're interested in being great actors.
No, I agree. I fell ass backwards in all this. I was doing Second City improv. I didn't care about SNL or anything. I just loved doing the improv.
Loved the art
then
of
I did Piven Theater for years and studied acting, and I didn't care about if there were 20 people in the audience or 100 or whatever. And then we did this, but I only did this because I wanted to learn more. I wanted to be more educated by having all these people on. Like I remember some of our first shows were like Craig Bierko and some great New York actors, Michael Ian Black, people like that, comedians, people I really love. And then you just kind of fall ass backwards into the notoriety thing and stuff. But I always feel like the people that are the best at what they do, they set out just to be talented and not be famous.
Oh, to learn
right?
To learn a craft. I mean, that's what it's about. But we live in a
when you
we
were
live
with
in a new
Stella,
world. We live in a new world.
When you were with Stella, did you feel like there were some people that were there just to be famous?
Well, when I worked with Stella toward the end of her life, and when I got to her, she was much older, and she had a cane. And she would walk up with her cane, and you did not want her to get near you with her cane. So she weeded everyone out. So only people that studied with her toward the end of her life really wanted to be there.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it all starts with, you know, I saw something on Facebook the other day, stop making stupid people famous. Like,
yes.
You know, if you drink the sludge, you know, I'm going to, you know, you're going to get a 3-picture deal on, oh. you know, a reality show. I mean, it's a different world. It's not about craft. It's about, you know, being marketable. And, I mean, I'm not going to name names, but there's, you know, there's 12, 15 people that have never studied anything, and they have a talk show, and they have a huge series, and they have a huge brand, and has nothing to do with a craft. So we live in a brave new world, you know?
Sometimes I get frustrated by that a little bit. Sometimes I'll be like, oh, why this guy? And wait, what did I do wrong? But then I kind of feel like, I feel like I know I do such a good job at what I do that at the end of the day I'm like, all right, you know, it's not the money that guy has. It's not the, you know,
exactly.
He gets to do more
and you're still a
things,
kid.
But I'm, yeah.
You're still a kid.
Yeah. You're still
30s,
a kid.
Okay.
You're 30s, you're still a kid.
Okay.
You're a hip
feel,
kid, but you're a kid.
I feel
oh
old.
Oh, my God, you're a baby.
Oh, my God, I feel like time's passing me by.
Oh, no, you're just starting. You're just starting, right, Paul?
That's right.
You're
That's
just
right.
starting.
Do you sing, Paul, still?
Every day.
Every day, still.
You
That's
want me to
great.
Open that for you, and you can do a little number for them? Because I know you're dying to.
Not really.
Dying.
I'm
going
to sing a song with the Volo, you know, those three young tenors at the Gibson Amphitheater Universal?
Really?
Oh,
on the
great.
27th, they've asked me to be a guest star.
I would love to be there for
so
that. That's on the 27th?
Yeah.
At Universal.
I'm going to do one song, I think, maybe more. But
oh, that's great.
I'm going to do O Sole Mio.
Oh, that's great. That'll be great.
That's exciting. And the date again and where, Paul?
The 27th. I'll do a little bit of it for you.
Yeah, please.
Yes, please do. Bella cosa, una giorna di sole, un'aria serena dopo una tempesta, l'aria fresca pare già una festa. Che bella cosa una giornata di sole, vado sole, che ho bello idee, oh sole mio, sta in fronte a te, oh sole mio. Stand from the fair, stand up from the Bravo! Bravo!
Wow. Wow. That's the best birthday present ever. I'm just going to consider that.
Your turn, Matt.
Wow. That was outstanding. That's not as good as Me and Guys and Dolls, though. No, that was fantastic. Thank you, sir, very much. Oh, that was fantastic. Wow. blows me away. So the last I heard, Renee, let's talk a little more about this.
Last I heard.
Thank you. David wrote this, really convinces you to do it, all
right,
finally.
Right, right.
Took some time to convince you to do it, too, right?
Right.
When you're working with Paul, because most of your scenes are with Paul, beforehand...
Yeah.
Are you a part of that rehearsal process? Do you and Paul get together and discuss?
Of course.
Yeah, right. But what do you guys discuss when you're getting together before?
You know, there's a really interesting story. I think you remember, Paul, when we do a scene where he buys his daughter some flowers, and I'm not going to tell you why. I don't want to give it away. What was interesting about that scene is we both instinctually at the same time said, we don't want to rehearse
That's
this.
That one. We didn't want to rehearse
one
that one.
Scene. Nothing.
We knew
was,
exactly...
Said,
I felt that
mark,
she felt that we knew.
And we didn't even discuss it. We both looked at each other and said, we're good. Let's go. And that
David
scene,
was perfectly willing to do a regular, you know, my rehearsal, 20 minutes, half hour.
Yeah.
And that scene is so organic and raw and real, but somehow it just happened. And that was one scene that there was absolutely no rehearsal.
No.
We just kind of intuitively felt like, we know where we are, and let's
we hardly showed it to the DP, you know.
We didn't even show it. Really, yeah, it was crazy. So there was that kind of. You
and that's
know,
one of the best scenes. I think that's a terrific
great.
Scene.
Yeah,
well,
it
you're
is.
Wonderful in that.
So are you?
Thank you.
That is
but
great.
There was a lot of, you know, synchronicity throughout all of the process.
Right. You mind if I take a phone call?
No, take a phone call.
I usually don't take phone calls.
Are you live? Are you live on the air now?
We're live.
This is a very good friend of mine, so I want to take this phone call. Mikey, are you there? Mikey? Well, maybe he's not there. Hello?
Did we lose him?
No, he's not talking. He's too good. All right, I'm going to put him on hold. If Mikey wants to be on the show, he can talk to me later. What a guy. What a guy. Thanks for joining us, Mikey. I know he wanted to talk to Paul really badly. But Mikey sent me, by the way, I want to thank him. Mikey has made those great Matthew Aaron Show T-shirts and hats back at home in Chicago. And he sent me from Chicago for my birthday today. He sent me 2 Lou Malnati pizzas.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm
hats off to Mikey.
That'll break my diet a bit, but but I mean you look great, Paul. You've been working out or what?
Yeah,
you're doing the whole thing, huh?
Yes.
That's great. Yeah. And Renee, you always look great. I mean I tell you look great, but
you're sweet.
I mean, yeah, right.
You're sweet.
We know.
You're sweet. Thank you.
Oh. This is great. So Thursday at the Holly Shorts, you can get tickets online. You can also go to our website to the events page, and we'll send you right there to get the tickets. You can buy them right there. I think I'm going to come by.
On your 30th?
Yeah.
You should see it on a big screen.
Good,
that's why.
It's good
it's
culture,
it's a different
too.
Experience when you see it on a big screen.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
All right. We're going to try Mikey one more time. I'll try him one more time. Yes, this Mikey. Mikey, you there? You know, he's just... There's...
One second.
He's like
I know this might be a touchy subject. Does Mikey really exist?
Yeah. Or does he just follow you around?
I know that this is something for you. I don't want to bring you too far out of your comfort zone, but
is
some
Mikey
of
us
with just us have
now
these little friends. These little imaginary friends.
Yeah, I really don't have any friends.
Paul, so you created Mikey.
Yes, I did. But he's a great friend. Paul Sorvino, Renee Props, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you.
Last I Heard's the film, it's one of the best. It really is.
Thank you.
And especially, I mean, everyone should see this, but if you're Italian, you
got to see it.
Right now.
All right, come to your house and we'll discuss it.
Thank you so much for having us, really.
Thank you. It means
lovely.
So much to me, and this is the best birthday present ever. This is great.
Happy birthday.
God bless. Thank you so much for doing it. Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye. All right, we're going to be right back. Thank you, Caesar. You want to turn me off? You sure? You good there? You okay? All right. Listen, don't make me be like Paul on take number 3, all right? Let's see here. We got to get a little song going because we got to take pictures, I guess, real quick. And we will be back with the Men Behind Tangle, which is something I'm very, very excited about. Once again, we talked about it at the beginning of the show, and this is.
saw could have used a few pounds. Tight pants, points, hollering out. She was a black-haired beauty with big dark eyes and points all her own, sudden way up high. Way up firm and high. Out past the cornfields when the winds got heavy. Out in the back seat of my 60 Chevy. Working on mysteries without any clues. Working on a night move. Trying to make some front page driving news. Working on a night move.
No.
right. We are back. Last I heard, once again, please go to www.thematthewaronshow.com. You can go to the events section, and you can buy tickets for Holly Shorts, where you could see Last I Heard. David Rodriguez, one of the best directors that you need to remember the name of. Paul Sorvino, fantastic. Renee Props, great. You know, we had Chaz Palminteri on the show a year ago, and I love Chaz, and Chaz is a great guy. And now having Paul on, I feel like I'm inching closer to Al Pacino. Not sure how it's going to happen yet, but we're inching that way. We're inching that way. James DeJulio, Rob Salvatore, Tongle is the company. You guys are joining me. Is it DeJulio? Is it DeJulio? Salvatore, that's an Italian name.
Absolutely.
That's right. And my dear friend Charles Salvatore, he's a good friend of mine back in Chicago. So that name I got.
Yep.
Come on, it's not DeJulio, is it?
It is. It is.
It's so LA. I'm just kidding. All right. So, guys, Tongle, let's talk about this. Well, first of all, let's talk about how this started, because your guys' history fascinates me. Let me see if I understand everything. You had a production company. You had a deal with HBO and with National Lampoon. A friend of mine, Sherry Rosenberg-Kelton, was at National Lampoon and HBO for a while. So I know a little bit about the ins and outs of National Lampoon and how that works and HBO. Explain to me how you got started with that, and then we'll ease our way into Tongle.
Sure. I mean, I think we always say that we were just unsuccessful enough in Hollywood to figure out this whole Tongle thing. Rob and I and our other friend and partner, Mark, moved out here together from New York in 2000. And just to, oddly enough, we all wound up kind of originally working in banking, and I was on Wall Street at Lehman Brothers, and Rob was in investment banking, and Mark was at Morgan Stanley, and we moved out here just because pure opportunity, just, you know, the 2000s, the internet boom was kind of happening, and all kind of took different paths into the entertainment business in a more traditional sense. And I think what I found personally, Rick, really fast was that I couldn't believe how hard it was, having been someone who was, as a really young guy, like, you know, with a lot of responsibility traveling the globe for being an investment bank, I couldn't get a job, like, answering somebody's phone.
Yeah, right.
Right? And it was shocking.
That's absolutely true. I have a degree. I had a great GPA. I've worked forever. And then out here, if you want to be someone's assistant, I guess that doesn't matter. None of that matters.
Yeah.
None of that matters.
So we all took different routes. I mean, I wound up being like, I felt like the world's oldest intern for Harold Ramis, another great Chicago guy.
I love Harold Ramis. The best ever.
And, you know,
work for free. You might as well work for somebody.
Yeah, right.
You know, who is your hero.
And,
right?
You know, there's always going to be food around with Harold. That man just gross. Last time I saw Harold Ramis, he was getting there. He was getting there. But he looked thinner than As Good As It Gets, Harold. He was like somewhere in between. Like, he was working on it. He's not going to be
Egon. Wasn't Baby Boom Ramis.
He's not going to be Egon again anytime soon. No. Baby Boom Harold, gone. Yeah.
Russell Fiske.
But Harold Ramis is one of the greatest directors ever. So that's a great guy to learn under, though.
Well, I mean, yeah. I was like, well, if no one's going to pay me, I'm going to go make a list of people who I wanted to work for free.
That's how this show started.
Oh,
learn
really?
From the best. Well, yeah. I mean, it, in a little different way where I'd have people on that I wanted to learn from. But, yeah, I mean, if you're going to work for free for the best.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Once you take money out of the equation, you start to think about things, what you actually would want to do, mm-hmm. and, like, opportunities start presenting themselves.
That's great. So how'd you get hooked up with Harold?
Made a list. And I opened up the old days, they had the Hollywood Creative Directory.
Okay.
And went through and was like, all right, I'd work for this guy, work for this guy. The first name on the list was literally Robert Evans, who I wound up eventually working for.
That's right.
Because at the time, it was the big like, insider. Before they really had hipsters everywhere in L.A.,
yes.
The hipster move was to have the kid stays in the picture on audiobook.
Yes, the kid and audiobook. Exactly. That is the hipster move.
Was on a CD.
On audiobook. And then in order to make your hipster cred even better, you had to have the cartoon from South Park as well. Somewhere,
yeah.
Underground copy. Yeah, oh, I remember. Oh, yeah.
And so just literally just pure persistence. I called Ramis' office at Fox. I was like, you guys looking for any interns? And they said, sure. And I went out.
Really?
Yeah. And it, you know, worked.
And they didn't care about college credit or any of that shit.
It was the one who, like, yeah, most of them were like, you needed to have college credit because we can't insure you if you don't. And
sure.
I guess they didn't care. But
yeah, Harold's like, we didn't want to insure you anyways. It's okay. So, Rob, what was your background then? You're still investment banking at this point?
So I, right around the time when we moved out here.
You guys living together.
Yeah, at the time.
Going on,
we've been
right?
separated.
Yeah. Oh, you've been separated? Yeah. Well, I'm glad I could bring you two back together. This is great.
So we're right around the time, I guess, you were kind of catching on with Ramis. The dot-com bubble had kind of burst. I had the entrepreneurial bug. I was at, you know, you're kind of in your middle 20s, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to go back. I wanted to go back to business school.
Yeah.
I went to Austin to UT. I didn't know anybody. It was a really good thing, kind of a northeast Italian guy.
Yeah, you're in the middle of nowhere.
It was pretty neat. So I went down, and when, like, the first week of school was 9/11, economy tanked. I wound up.
That was my first week at Paramount. I remember, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Sign of impending doom.
When I had the summer before I went down to Austin, I had met a guy who had just sold a firm that did financial restructuring, something I'd never heard of, but basically working in distressed situations with companies that had either failed or were right on the edge of bankruptcy or working for the financial constituents, the bank, the bonds, the banks, et cetera. And he was a cool guy, and I was like, this guy kind of doesn't really feel like a banker to me. He kind of was like a casual guy. And he's like, hey, listen, if this is something that interests you, give me a call. So economy tanks. That summer, I'm looking for something to do. I call him up. He's like, great, we just got the Kmart bankruptcy. He's like, do you want to spend your summer in Detroit? I said, it sounds like fun. So I basically...
You did not. Well, you said it, but you were bullshit.
The one guy who said that.
I was like, one said sounds like fun to Kmart in Detroit.
It was a fascinating experience.
All right. There you go.
No, but anyway, I had to do something, right?
Yeah,
so,
right.
And they're willing to pay me a little bit.
Sure.
So I wound up then going to another firm after I graduated, but staying in that restructuring world. And that's kind of where James and I, we stayed very close friends, but things started to intersect. So I'd come out and visit him, and I'd go to the Paramount lot. And I'd be like, this would be the most amazing restructuring of all time. I would like, this place is upside down.
That's how you were thinking.
Yeah, because he
would be like, watch this, dude. I'm going to FedEx this luggage to New York, and no one's going to say anything. And then watch this. I'm going to try to get a box of pencils. I'm going to have to fill out 87 forms.
So I would just walk around and then the thing we talk about was, like, there was no, like, there were people at the very bottom who were working for nothing. Yeah. And then there were people at the top who were making a ton of money and kind of living these lavish lifestyles. And there was, like, no middle class in the studio. And we just kind of obsessed over it. And that turned into, well, it's so hard to get story to screen. And it's hard to get things developed. And there's 10 writers.
Sure.
And all these kind of, like, points were intersecting where it was really him saying eventually then when I got back out of school, he called me up one night and was like, hey, I got an idea. I'd like to develop a story. Can you help? Which I realized meant, do you have any money to give me?
Yeah, no.
But it was something, it was around a subject matter that I felt passionately about that I had some experience with. It was around horse racing. I was kind of corrupted at an early age. Both my parents were from Brooklyn. You know, we'd go to the track. I loved the handicap, kind of a math guy. So all this stuff. And we said, you know what, if we're going to do it, let's do it right. Let's actually set up a business. And he was going to write the treatment for it, and I can kind of, you know, help him along the way, maybe get him some access to people. And that's actually how we went from best friends to business partners. We had no grandiose, you know, illusions of turning it into anything. We just thought, let's try this. This will be fun.
Let's see what we can do with it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And is this how Half Shell was formed?
Yeah, that's it. And it was funny. As we look back on it, I think you just see
Half Shell Entertainment, for the people listening, which is your production company, right?
Right. I mean, I think as we look back on it, we can see like the current incarnation of what we're doing in Tongle just slowly reveal itself over time.
Yeah.
So the insight I had at Paramount was like, wait a minute, there's a romantic comedy. We're trying to put a romantic comedy in development. There are 10 names on this list who could potentially write or direct this. Those same 10 names are on the list at Warner's, at Fox,
everywhere.
Same 10 names. And I said, you know what? If you ran a business and your human resources strategy was to only hire people who had lots of other job offers, well, the cost of doing business can go through the roof.
Yeah.
But everyone wants more content. Everyone wants more movies. Everyone wants good content. And you know that combined with the idea that movies are starting to get made by financial models. So, you know.
No, this is really, really smart. And we'll get to Tongle because that's what you're talking about right here, about basically – instead of it just being those 10 guys, in a way, you're kind of spreading it out for everyone else. And then we'll talk about Tangle.com, which is where people can go. But what I find fascinating about what you guys are doing here is it didn't seem like you had long-term plans, like the five-year plan. Like, here's what we're going to do.
It started.
Are you still that way, by the way? Do you still not do the five-year plan?
No, it's a lot different now.
Yeah, okay.
we'll get into that when we get get into the Tangle story. But when he came to me with the idea to develop Stud, he had found a book, and you know, it was a journalistic look into the world of breeding, and got me thinking about how can you get your hands on a really interesting piece of, you know, either journalism or literature or story, something that's a way into a world to explore. The Lampoon stuff came after it, and Lampoon was in distress, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't doing well. They didn't have any cash, and that's actually when he called me when
like
I was
now.
Yeah, like
yeah,
now,
like right now.
Well, like for like the last 25 years,
right?
It kind of, you know, it has that history. But we were thinking, you know, is this a distressed asset that we could maybe find somebody to buy? And what we decided was the easy way in for us was get an option on it and dig into that treasure. That's when it developed from two guys developing a story together to this can be a full-time business that we need to actually raise money for. We said, let's not do this as a one-off. Let's try to develop a bunch of screenplays out of this, and let's do the development outside the walls. Let's go find young, up-and-coming people who we think have the right creative sensibilities, who were passionate either about the Lampoon or... Yeah, we even hired somebody who came from the Harvard.
There's not
Lampoon.
Many people out there like that, though. I got to tell you, guys were doing something different, which is noble, but at the same time smart. Because when you're looking for outside sources and outside... I'll give you an example. I get offered scripts all the time, like people think I'm going to do something with them or could do something with them. I'm not, you know, Donnie Trump. And I read some of these scripts. I won't say which one, so I never get sued. But some of them are better than... anything you'll read out here. And I read studio scripts all the time, way before they're made into movies. I read scripts from agents all the time, my friends. There's a lot of outside talent that Hollywood just doesn't give two looks to, or one look to. And there's some really talented people.
And those were the kernels, the seeds of what Tangle became. So
that,
it was, we didn't, you just said, like, we hadn't thought it through,
sure.
But in not thinking it through, when we had those developed screenplays, and there were others, there was the project we did that eventually went into HBO, there were these comedies that we did for the National Lampoon, there were a couple other projects that were one-offs. We never had a plan to get them financed, and we never had a plan to get them distributed, right? And we didn't really have any faculty to do that as well. So it was banging our heads against the wall, and actually a gentleman who had invested in kind of the Lampoon slate, who had become a little bit of a mentor to us, we went back to him and we're like, what the hell should we do? Like, you know, we've got what we think are really interesting stories written by really talented people that we think are great, but we're trying to get these financed out and put them back into the studio system. And it was that conversation. It was probably like middle 2007, summer 2007.
Yeah, I mean, I think our business up until that point was based around the idea of just talent and access, right?
Yeah.
We wanted to find different talent or in a different place and give it access or develop work with it. I think when we started to have these conversations and we started to think about talent, access, and technology.
Yes.
And putting those three ideas together in something that could actually level the playing field for.
Because when
work.
Most people put production companies together, and knowing as many people as I do in that field, they put a production company together going, give me those 10 names. That's who we're going to make movies with. You guys were like, we're going to find talent, and we're gonna, you know. Hey, listen, you save money that way. There's a lot of good parts.
We didn't have the access to the talent. We were going out and raising money or putting our own money into projects to get them written and find the writing talent, which we could find by, you know, just saying we have an open writing assignment. But we didn't have the directors or the key elements to attach. So when we had the conversation with this guy, it was, why don't you think about developing, you know, content through a different model, through a distributed workforce model. And that was when we were like, all right, well, let's crowdsource a movie. Again, not knowing how we were going to finance it or distribute it, we kind of got back to the same point. And that's when we hit the pause button.
Yeah.
The economy had kind of bottomed out again. Social media was coming on, right? YouTube had become a fact of life. And that's when we said, you know what, maybe maybe we can start producing short form branded content. We knew nothing about advertising.
Okay, so this is what was smart to me, but this is also where, yeah, you knew nothing about it. You guys don't come from the ad world. We just heard you're both from the banking world. You got so sick of it, you work for Robert Evans. You must really hate banking. And you go to Texas and do whatever the hell you're doing, and it's like, so, okay, ads. How did this come up to do branded content?
I think we woke up one night and we said, you know what? All the content in the world is actually paid for by brands.
Right.
So if whether it's the brands paying for Criminal Minds because they're indirectly
advertising, they got commercials, sure.
They're indirectly financing the production and they have no intellectual property ownership, right? Or it's pure advertising content supporting all that art and copy, or even more so, you know, creeping into the world of feature films.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no tentpole film out there that doesn't have some brand integration. I mean, even
tons of product placement.
If we're gonna try to build a big creative community, like at scale, big content machine, the way to monetize it early on was to go where the pain and the money was. The brands needed the content. So we just saw you start to dig in, you see that the channels of distribution were just blowing out towards infinite, and we said. We looked at it not through the advertising lens, but just of the content creation. We're like, how are they gonna produce all the content?
Sure.
And we were learning about crowdsourcing and distributed workforce models, and we realized that we actually believe fundamentally the only way to procure that content, to deliver it, is through a model like this. You weren't gonna be able to go back to agency, production company you've been using, traditional way. There had to be a new mechanism to do it. And I mean, it's nascent. It's the first inning of all this.
It
stuff.
Is.
Anyway,
it so, is. You're right.
It's funny. The last giant wave of innovation, I think, in the entertainment business was all driven by technology, by pure technology like ILM, Pixar, the idea that you can make a computer-generated movie, right? Well, this is driven by technology, but it's actually more driven by labor, and the labor model is the next big innovation in creative work.
Yeah. No. I
or access, really.
So. Thank you, Joe. Have a good one.
Thanks,
Thank
Joe.
You.
Thanks, Joe.
Once again, 603 North Hollywood Way, Tay, Chicago. I'm here with Rob and James. We're talking about Tongo.
He looks fantastic.
Doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's in great shape. Yeah. He doesn't have...
That must not eat up the menu.
He doesn't have the mini deep dish every day. He spreads it out. He'll go with the tuna melt here and there.
He must have some sort of nice workout regimen, like nice Rocky Balboa build going on.
Yeah, I need to get workout tips from Joe.
Sorry.
No. It's fine. Joe loves hearing how great Joe is. Don't worry about it. He's okay with it. I wanted to ask you guys, there's so much I want to talk about this. All right. How did you guys get in touch with all these with all these brands? Like, for instance, you guys have worked for Pepsi, or right now you did the Trident gum right now. You did ideas yesterday in the pitch and the video. We'll get to that.
Right.
But okay, you get with all these companies. How?
Slugging it out, man.
Because you do not come from that world, so you got to be slugging it, right?
It was
blind.
Give me an example. What was like the first company that you got involved? And how did you pitch this and sell it to them?
The first few companies were like Lending Tree, Vineyard Vines, Kiva, the micro lender.
Sure.
It was in the very early going, like just as the site went live, we were begging brands. We said, just let us prove it out. We'll put up the prize. We'll put up the inducement to the community. Just let us co-opt your brand and prove that this can work. And pretty quickly, people showed up to submit ideas, to make videos, because there was that opportunity there.
The opportunity.
And it just started to build on itself.
It was totally freaky at the time, because when we did like a beta test of it, it was like we knew, basically everybody who was making a submission.
Yeah.
Because we knew all the creative people and funny,
there's something there. So when we were doing the beta submissions, we knew everybody. We were leaning on our network of people we knew in Hollywood. But I was also like going back to my high school friends, who I think are hilarious.
Sure.
So we never came into it with that bias of, oh, there's six talented. We're like, there's like 6 million talented people in the world. Like, anybody who grew up, it's like, how many guys you know, look at who I'm talking to, how many guys you know that grew up who were a piss riot, who just had good ideas? Every night you sit on your couch, I got a better idea than that.
Yeah.
And that's all this was. So, even with a few hundred people, we were coming up with like funny setups, funny little ideas and kernels for brands. And it's like, this is a tie company, or this is a company that, you know, lends money or informs you about something, or it's products that were in everybody's everyday life.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that far of a stretch to turn on that kind of latent talent, that latent creativity that's walking around everywhere. Some dude who sells insurance, or some guy who's a teacher, some guy who's a banker, or maybe somebody who's a writer.
This is genius. So at what point how did people find out about this, though, when you got started the beta? It was just because you're friends and everything, but people like, you got to go to this?
2009, 2010, it was very much hand-to-hand combat. It was us just scratching and clawing and trying to get into, like, either innovation groups at big companies. And, you know, listen, when you're doing something that's pretty far out ahead of things, you can get people's attention. And how do you get your core consumers involved, right? How can you leverage technology? How can you do things more efficiently? Those were kind of powerful, like, little buzzwords to get people's attention. And then you'd be surprised. Like, we participated in this thing at Pepsi, innovation incubator program called the PepsiCo 10, where they had a call to action for young companies that were either being disruptive or part of the marketing revolution or part of, you know, retail or gaming and these different kind of silos.
And we just dropped everything and said, we're going to win this.
Yeah.
We look at each other and we literally, it was our plan.
So it was one
we were not going to not win the
PepsiCo. Validation with Pepsi allows you to, you know, call up the next company, call up the next company. And then our initial investor, the gentleman we talked about, his name is Jack Hughes. He started a business called Top Coder, which is a crowdsourced development platform where we actually built our technology. You know, he was always saying to us, if you build it, they will come. So, like, he had seen hundreds of thousands of coders, from amateurs to hobbyists to the best in the world, show up when there was work there. Same thing happened for us. Once we put out a call for commercial work, we need your ideas, or we need your pitches, or we need your videos, people showed up, people start winning.
They all started showing
people
up.
Get paid, people tell their friends, word
but
spread.
But there was no marketing or anything, right?
No.
You guys didn't spend a dime on just putting it on even like Facebook ads or whatever.
Nothing.
I don't think Facebook ads even existed at the time.
Oh, they didn't exist in 09? Yeah, probably not. Maybe not, actually. I mean, this is great. So you kind of caught lightning in a bottle. You know you have a great idea. My point with this is, you know you have a great idea when you do absolutely no advertising for it. And what's funny is you're doing advertising for these companies. But you do no advertising for your own site, and people just come. They find it. They tell their friend. They tell their friend's friends. They're like, I won, like, I got... I don't even call it winning in a way, even though it's a competition, because it's just a great idea.
So
your great idea was bought for $500. I got $500.
The holy shit moment was, I remember it was in New York. I was back in New York for the holidays. My wife and I were in the hotel room. We were wrapping up our Kiva project, and a guy from northern Sweden submitted an animation that just blew us away. It actually wound up being on the homepage of YouTube a couple months later when there was some Jeremy Piven was doing some kind of like editorial thing. But when somebody literally who lived like 60 kilometers south of the Arctic Circle found out about a micro lending site that he'd never heard of before through our platform, created an amazing animation, we were like, you know what? This thing can go.
Yeah.
Like, it can really work. And it was the whole point of like preaching, like, talent is everywhere. It's on all corners of the globe. People want to tell the a story for you.
And then it just materialized in front of their eyes. We're like, wow. Okay.
So how much did you take from the studio system, being in the business? James, this is mostly you then. Being at Paramount and being with Harold Ramis and Robert Evans and National Lampoon's, how much did you guys take from that to Tangle?
Well, I mean, I would say I wouldn't just limit it to the studio system. I'd say how much do you take from this town?
Sure, okay.
Right? There's just an untapped, huge amount of creative energy just here. People who would just want access. Right, we had friends who were like, hey, I'm making a Heineken spec commercial this weekend. I borrowed $35,000 from my uncle. Do you want to help out? And it was like, well, has anyone in Heineken asked for this? And they would come back to us and be like, hey, James, can you get this reel on somebody's desk? I was like, I don't even know anything about advertising. They're like, how can I help you? You know, it doesn't make any sense for you to expend all this creative energy. But it was clear that it was out there that people wanted to work in this. They wanted to work creatively. You know, there was just no real means to do it. So I would say that was the obviously the key insight was how much creative talent there was and how fast technology, you know, the Moore's Law thing applies to cameras as much as it does to microprocessors.
That's right. So
now, like, everyone's so you just got that iPad right there, right?
Sure.
When we started this company, we never dreamed that thing even would exist, right?
Yeah, it still just blows my mind that this was literally like 4 years ago, right. And some of this shit wasn't even relevant then. And I mean, I did this Tongle. For our listeners, I went to Tongle.com yesterday. I submitted five ideas for this Trident gum ad, which you could submit five.
So you read the brief?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
The brief had some spark of creativity? And now you're waiting to see if you won.
I was just firing them off. And that's the beauty of this. You can just fire them off. You can just have fun with it. And because you never know, sometimes a fun idea is all you need.
And it's meant to be fun. So that's, right. I would say that now that we're on that topic, that was the other key insight that we took, I think, mostly out of the studios was that it was filmmaking or creative work is the most collaborative work in the world. There's this myth of the auteur,
yes.
You know? And just so many people have their hands in so much, and there's different people make different contributions. And there are people who are generally good at coming up with ideas, and there are people who are really good at executing. And they're never really ever the same person.
Yeah. Well, you guys broke through the stereotype, the cliche that is the Hollywood system, if you will, where everybody kind of, I mean, there's a little bit of an advantage for people who already have all the connections and
sure.
have all the work going on. There's guys like Rob Cohen who've made 10 terrible movies and is still getting $50 million budgets to make movies because he's Rob Cohen and he knows everybody and that's just the way it is. And you guys broke out from that system in a way, but you're still in Hollywood, right? Would you consider yourself still a part of Hollywood? Like your production company, if something came along where you wanted to produce something again, would you consider doing it? Or are you like strictly, this is where we're at right now? What is the five-year plan? That's the question, I
yeah,
guess.
Yeah, so
what is that?
I mean, whether or not this is Hollywood or not, I don't know. I mean, I think it's just more broadly creativity.
Sure.
So obviously Hollywood is part of that. I think, you know, great advertising work is creative. There's, you know, I think
this
a lot
is
of
very independent.
This is very independent. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, in terms of the 5-year plan, I'll answer the first question first. If something came along, an opportunity to produce something, no, we wouldn't do it. Because Tongle is our lives and it's 24/7
yeah.
and it's, we're all in on it and it's quite honestly too much fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've gone from three guys that started a company together. We just hired our 33rd employee. So it's a family now and yeah, there's responsibility that comes with that as well, which is all exciting.
But I think we would think of a way to use Tongle to bring it to life.
That's right.
Yeah, and what that's interesting. That I like. What fascinates me, too, and I've been telling people this, is when I was first told about your guys' website and the idea and everything, and this was a while ago, my first instinct as a guy who does an independent film show, I mean, we cover studio stuff, too, but obviously it's stuff that I think's good. So my first thought was, oh, this is a site for commercials? I'm not a commercial guy. I'm an indie film guy. Then I went to the site and I learned all about it. And this is where all our film listeners, that this is just great for the writers out there that listen to all. We have a lot of college students that go to film school that listen to the show. And what I would say is why this site's so great. One, it's independent. It's not like when you watch a Celebrity Apprentice and they got to make a commercial for somebody or whatever. This is a site where your independent ideas count. You get an idea phase. There's a pitch phase and a video phase. And basically how this works is, for instance, with the Trident ad that you're doing right now, is you ask people to submit ideas. Now, you'll choose two ideas, right?
140 characters or less.
Right, 140 characters or less, like Twitter.
24 yep. hours to submit an idea.
Right, so that's just the idea,
right.
The idea phase. Then you're going to choose two of them, correct, for the Trident ad?
Trident, we'll choose two.
Okay, you choose
two. We get
two,
out of the way.
You choose two for Trident. For some, you choose four, five, yep. whatever.
Right.
Then there's the pitch phase. And based off of the two that you chose, people then can submit pitches.
Right. Anybody. Doesn't have to be the two people that submitted
anybody.
It. Anybody
so
can come
the
in.
The whole
right.
distinction is that if you think of a traditional competition, right? Like
yes.
Top Chef, right? There's 25 chef testants, and one person is Top Chef. This is top content. We take the best ideas, and then new people come in, and they say, let me take your idea and actually develop it and pitch that. So that's the Hollywood talking in that one little nuance
right.
is that, oh, okay, here's this idea that's been pushed forward. Now I'm going to give you
it's
my
collaborative.
Take. It's collaborative. Let me give you my take. I can bring
yep.
it to life.
Brands love it, right, too, because they see this array of creativity.
Sure.
They get to maybe get outside their own heads, which is a big problem. They try stuff that they otherwise maybe wouldn't have. You've got people who are, you know, maybe, you know, have an affinity for the product. Or and then you have... of those two ideas, I don't know how many pitches we're going to get. I don't know, maybe we get 50, 80 pitches. So you're going to get, you know, 20 to 30 different interpretations of each of those. People with different creative sensibilities, people with, you know, different styles.
Somebody who's more funny.
Well, here's what I like, too. Like, we have this comment about, you know, like, anybody can have an idea about any movie, about anything. So anybody can have an idea. You can go to the site, and my mom could have a great idea for an Olay ad.
Sure.
And then that's it. She can win like $250, $500.
She's
whatever.
Probably used the product for 30 years.
Right. So anyone can have an idea. Then what I love about this is then the pitch process. You can have phases where you could write scripts. Right now you have a script. You're doing a script for the Gamefly ad, correct?
Right.
With Blake Griffin, which is huge. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. It's Gamefly. It's Blake Griffin, and they want you to write a little script for it if you're a writer. Mm-hmm. So what a great opportunity for independent writers just to get your work out there and see if you got
like
what it
takes. It's not an advertising site. It's a creativity site.
Right. That's what I really dig about.
And if you
it.
Think about think about how many great directors got their start.
Yeah.
Doing commercials.
Well, right. Some of my directing friends who do huge movies, do small movies, do indie movies, still do commercials. Yeah. It's a great outlet for creativity in a way. Talk to me, though, about the video process now, because this is where, like, the idea all comes together. Right. So how does this work?
Go ahead.
So if you pitch on an idea and your pitch gets greenlit or you get funded, you basically get a small budget to go out into production, and you know you're going to earn an amount of money, and that usually ranges from $25,000 to $5,000 on top of it. So you may be getting $5,000, you know, funding to go out and film your commercial, but you know you're going to make a second payment when you deliver the video to the site.
Yeah.
So what's happening is we created this kind of like steady stream of work, sustainability for filmmakers. We've got, you know, seven people who have made over $100,000. We've got one group that's made $250,000 in under a year.
Wow.
We've got people like who just submit ideas who have made over $10,000. There's a 15-year-old in Texas who's made almost $30,000 making stop-motion Lego movies. So if you do it and you put your head down...
The stuff you guys are doing with Lego's great.
Yeah,
it's just, that's just the intersection of interest and just amazing creativity. I mean, that kid was young man was a builder, and he's obviously super talented, and... You know, he's got a passion for animation, and he's been playing with the product. And I tell you what, he's a good storyteller, too. And I think that's, you know, for those who are either starting out or in film school and are listening to this, I think the best thing we can offer is that you're going to be evaluated on, you know, how you executed, on the merit of your submission. If a brand or a sponsor knew perhaps that... maybe it was a high school student who was submitting the work. Maybe there would have been a bias there. You know, maybe he wouldn't have gotten hired to do it. But if you come in and you have a great setup and you have great execution, you've done great. You know, you've done great work that you can point to elsewhere. You're going to get the opportunity. And if you crush it, you win.
Well, I want you guys to ask one of the FAQs. One of the frequently asked questions I saw from being on your site and having people that post comments, and that's the great thing, too. People can ask questions, post comments.
It's open, yeah.
This one kid's 16 years old, and he just wanted to make sure, can I submit an idea? And you guys are all for that.
13 or older.
13 or older. Okay, 13 or older. So, yeah, that's good.
As long as he isn't in Cuba, Syria, Quebec... Yeah.
Yeah.
Egypt,
is there really some
Myanmar?
What's wrong with Cuba? What do we got against Cuba? Is there a problem with Cuba I don't know about?
Just a few places we're embargoed from, but for the most part, it's just a few.
Oh yeah. All right. So that's good for that kid to know, though. Yeah, you're 16, but do your idea. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people, have, you know, come out of film school as well. People who were maybe working on features but hadn't done any production.
No, this is
something
I told about my teaching friends at DePaul to put out to their students.
Sure.
Toggle.
Well,
I was talking to my buddy this week about it. Yeah.
Because I think people go to film school and they come out here and or they start out here and they just sit around in coffee shops waiting for someone to tap them on the shoulder and say, hey. Here's $20 million.
Yeah.
Go make your dream. But the reality is that the best creative people hustle.
I think, you know, at its core, right, so it's Tongo's about creativity, but a lot of what these models, this crowdsourced, open innovation, distributed work models are about are really about labor, right?
Yeah.
It's about how people are going to work in the future. And there's still going to be office buildings where people go, but a lot more of it's going to be, I think, done in this manner. And I think it's great because I think it provides opportunity. I also think it allows the individual to be much more enterprising.
Yeah.
And I think it's a hopeful thing. I think it's great. I think that's what's awesome about the connectivity of the internet is that you don't have to pick your life up. Come here. Know somebody. Try to get in. Grind away. The if you go to the Tongo/Globe and look where the submissions are coming from, look where the winning where winning is happening.
Yeah,
it looks. We say all the time, it looks like a wireless map, you know, coverage map, that's the best, and that just proves that there are good ideas. And you know, we've got filmmakers in the middle of the group he was talking about is in Boston. You know, we've got a guy in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, who's you know amazing filmmaker. He decided not to move out here. Some of his friends did. That's how he found out about us. But he's, you know, working, you know, basically supplementing his income this way, and he's still
he's making his art, and he's enjoying it. He's earning money. You know what he's not doing? Waiting tables.
Hard work. Hard work creates opportunity too. You know, and that's the thing. These guys are putting forth a lot of hard work.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something too to putting yourself out there creatively, getting feedback,
That's hard.
Yeah.
It's always hard to put yourself out there and say.
But the people we've seen really get better, you know, the community members who've been with us for years, who we've seen get better, and build themselves into actual businesses and producers, are the ones who put themselves out there. They never got hung up on, really on failing. And I mean, I think with us, like look at Half Shell, like we didn't succeed with Half Shell, we failed, but we learned. Try to get better. Built a better business model, you know, and we're making mistakes every day at Tongle, but we're trying to learn from it.
That's great. Let me ask you, create the new users compared to existing users. Is there any kind of statistical difference in whose ideas get picked up and whose don't? Do existing users seem to have more of a chance of making their... But I think this also goes back to what you were saying about how they've been working and they've been working and they've been working. So maybe they have a more fine-tuned of a machine. But what would you say to new users about the competition of existing users?
I would say I think the secret to success is read the briefs. Be mindful of what you're being asked, and then react to it creatively in the right way. I mean, are there people who have gotten better over time? Yeah. Is there a bias or do the existing users do better? Not necessarily. There are some people who have done well over time, but I think the people who come in and read the briefs and react to it, and then I think also self-select into the stuff that they're interested in and the brands that they like and have some sort of affinity or connection to. I think that's where you see a lot of people perform well.
It's like Twitter. If you signed up for Twitter today and you never did it before, you wouldn't be able to articulate yourself too clearly in 140 characters. But the best users, the best members who can read a brief and react and tell 140 character story that has a beginning, a middle, and an end, like that I think is the key to success.
Where
thoughts that you're submitting rather than just, you know.
Where we've seen a lot of improvement is from the filmmaking side, where early submissions with people who are just starting out, they've invested, they've bought better equipment, they've found better talent to perform. They put more into lighting and sound and post production. That's where we've seen that's where you see kind of the real learning curve.
Yeah.
The ideation, the coolest part is, it's usually like a 60-40 split between people who are in the community and people who are new who participate, who maybe they were in the community and dormant, or maybe they came in for the first time because they found out about it. That's really where the community kind of gets stirred up, and the demographics remain really diverse and interesting. It's from having a lot of different types of brands. You get a lot of different types of people.
This may be a little inside baseball, but as a company, do you see yourself extending your brand to also creating original branded content yourself as a company outside of the crowdsourcing?
I think so, yeah.
You do see that?
I think it may be for us. It may be with a partner.
Sure.
Like a movie studio or a production company. I mean, I think we're stretching. We just got into music videos.
Yes.
Which is really exciting. In 2011, we, through, again, the same kind of hard work we put into getting, McDonald's to do it, we put towards Capitol Records, and we wound up doing a great project with the Beach Boys when they finally released Smile, and we did the music video for Heroes and Villains, and it was, knock your socks off, awesome, but in the process, we met this great guy over at Capitol named Dennis Wolf, who was the head of A&R for the catalog. He became kind of enamored with Tongle, and that, this winter after we announced that we had taken on the round of financing, he just out of the blue reached out and said, I really always loved what you guys were doing. I really want to be a part of it. And we said, This is a, we think, again, same way. You start, people started commercials. People started, you know, great directors started in music videos too. There's a huge demand in the marketplace for it because the labels are facing the same dynamics because of digital that the brands are. We said, all right, well, let's double down in here. Let's invest. And we've got two great projects right now, again, for the Beach Boys on the site, but we're working on other artists. We're not just, even though we love the Beach Boys, we're not solely Beach Boys fans. What's that? Oh, absolutely. Amazing.
So that's great. Do you seek out that opportunity, Capitol Records, or did they come to you?
We sought it out.
You sought it out. Yeah. So and
we're having conversations just about every label now.
Great. So you guys don't discriminate from any brands or any labels when you do music or anything like that. You guys are very open to working with any kind of company that wants to create content.
Yeah, we want to get the brands and the labels together. I mean, we're doing it now. We have something going on with Fender. There's a guitar solo competition.
Okay, yes.
On the site, sponsored by Fender. So there's the Beach Boys. The reason why they're working with us and promoting what they're doing on the site is because there's a box set coming out. I'll plug the box set for you guys. At the end of August, called Made in California, which is a career retrospective, like the definitive last word in everything Beach Boys.
Yeah, I don't mind you plugging the Beach Boys.
and anyway, so there was a track on that had, they never had a guitar solo. It had a horn solo.
Yeah.
And it was recorded in the 70s called Going to the Beach. It was like this, you know, fun, like Mike Love blues shuffle kind of a thing. And well, they had the multi-track recording, so they were able to actually drop the horn solo out. And they said, you know, this needs a guitar solo. So we said, all right, well, let's find the guitar player.
Holy cow. That's great.
Yeah, again, so it's just creativity. You could be a director or a guitar player. We want to basically...
That's so awesome that you can do that. That's fucking awesome.
Yeah, the one mandate we had when we took our initial investment was build an awesome piece of technology underneath it.
Yeah.
So it's dynamic so that, you know, down the line, if... You know, we obviously didn't know that we were going to do a guitar solo contest for Fender and the Beach Boys, but it was make it so that whatever phase we want, whatever, you know, group
whatever
of creativity,
input,
yeah, whatever input you want, whatever output is desired,
yeah,
whatever deliverable you want, can happen, and that's
We did a great radio ad for Wix.
That's great.
They came to us and said, "Can you guys do a radio ad?" We said, I guess
why not? Sure. And now you're doing the GameFly, which
right,
that's
yeah,
going to be a radio ad,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Right. So I'm on the website right now because I was just I don't know why I keep looking at this, but just so our listeners know about August 14th, I keep staring at this like I have an idea, but I don't yet. For the Lego DC Universe superheroes, you're accepting pitches until tomorrow.
Correct.
So people remember that. I mean, the stuff you're doing with Lego, because our audience, we have a lot of Comic-Con, you know, we have a lot of Comic-Con fans and superhero fans, and they geek out for this stuff. I mean, the stuff you're doing with Lego is right up their alley.
Yeah, for the Marvel one, we've got two limited edition signed Lego limited edition minifigures by Stan Lee.
That's
part beyond the $20,000, you get that too. So people are having some fun.
I mean, the prize for the script phase of the GameFly ad that you guys have until August 22nd, that's $5,000.
Yeah.
Right.
That's $5,000 to write a 15-second great radio script.
Yeah, there's well over $1 million total on the site right now for creative work.
That's great, isn't it? I mean, that's just great. The Ferguson voiceover. This is unique. This is different, kind of like the Fender thing in a way where it's like you went out and you got a guitar player. Now you're going out and getting talent. This is talent. This is to read a script that you guys have a PDF for on the site, and then you read the script, you record it, and you send in the voiceover, and people are going to be able to choose who this voiceover is going to be.
And it's just about getting different disciplines and interests in the community, right? So now we'll have VO talent, we've got music talent, we've got writing talent, we've got filmmaking talent, we've got editing talent. You know, so the last, you know, where it goes from here is how can we then build out the platform and develop the technology so that they can get together and collaborate even more. So they're collaborating through the process right now, but we want to make it so that, you know, if you're shooting something on, you know, Ventura Boulevard on a Saturday and somebody flakes out and you need talent or you need VO help, you know, after you've shot, you know, how can you find somebody in the community and start to get them, you know, really starting networking and working.
I think what's
together.
Great is that your work, if a creative person with no access to anyone, with just pure talent and equipment, you can do creative work, earn money for it, and that work can play on a global stage. You know, we had two ads in the Super Bowl last year, right? So
That's huge.
About the opportunity for talent.
That's huge.
I mean cast talent, right?
Sure.
So if we start to get actors into the mix, that great talent, great actors will make our production
even
better.
You just got seen by 100 million people.
Exactly.
You know? That's huge. Let me ask you also about here, I got some questions. I'm reading off that people sent in, and Caesar had some questions as well. Do you only focus on major brands? We kind of covered that, but let's talk about smaller businesses.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean,
we think it's we don't just focus on big brands. We're working with a lot of different types of businesses. We think for smaller companies, it's actually a great way to level the playing field. So, you know, they don't have an agency or record. They don't have $500,000 to go shoot a television spot, or they need content at scale. Maybe they're just starting off. They're trying to, you know, populate their site or one of their online channels, and we can do this for them. It's also a great way for smaller businesses that don't have creative departments in-house or marketing departments in-house who are trying to do everything themselves. Hey, tap into the creative, you know, process and build some brand yeah. awareness while you're doing it.
Adopt this new thing and get creative work that looks like it cost $1 million for $50,000.
Yeah, that's another thing. If you see these final video products at Tongle.com, and you can go to, you know, some of these companies' websites are airing them, and they're on the websites, they're on the air, whatever. But if you go and you see these videos, I mean, these look like $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 videos that were probably shot for a couple grand, maybe less. You know, it's like, it's fantastic. It's fantastic, the equipment that we have nowadays and the kind of access you can get to it and the kind of quality it churns out. Anyone can do this.
Yeah, I mean, the top creators we know now are starting to invest and shooting on, like, the
Red Epics
and stuff like that. And
they're taking the best are taking the money they're making.
And they're investing in Red. Yeah, because Red's an expensive camera, so they're investing in it. And that's smart, though, because they're going to try to make the best-looking product they can make. But coming from the indie film world and coming from film school and stuff, I could tell you don't even need Red to make a great-looking commercial. And I think part of the thing about commercials is, and I want to know what your guys' tips are for people when they're making commercials, other than following, you obviously have mentioned numerous times, Rob, the brief notes, which is very important.
Yep.
But outside of that, I would say the most important thing to making a commercial is make sure you include everything that the brand wants, but also to make it memorable and creative. Would you say that's
unexpected? And I think make it unexpected and tell a good story. Like I said before, beginning, middle, and end.
In 15 seconds, 30 seconds, right. That's crazy. But if you can do it, there's an art to that, too.
Sure.
Who could tell? I took screenwriting with so many people over the years, and they're like, oh, I could never do a TV show. I don't know how to tell a 30-minute story. Try telling a 30-second story.
Yeah. It's a special talent. I mean, how many friends do you know they ask you, they start telling the story, and they don't ever shut up for like 5 minutes. I'm like, wait, I got the point, dude.
No, I'm that guy. That's me.
I mean, and I think that's the fun that we have with it too. I think that's really kind of what's at the core of it. Is it's just a mechanism to tell stories, right?
Yes.
Everyone's a storyteller. there are good ones and there are bad ones, but everyone's a storyteller, and I think that's what's cool about it. I mean, yesterday when you submitted the five things, you told, you know, there were little stories.
Yes.
You had a story in your mind. You distilled it down to 140 characters.
Yes.
So that's
and that was tough. I mean, I had to start cutting out words, and I'm like, all right.
Abbreviating.
Listen, this won't be the best grammar ever.
By the way, if he wins, everyone's going to call bullshit.
Hey, listen.
Integrity shot.
I got
shot.
Some good ones in there, all right? You guys, we won't talk about them because obviously we've done our research as well, and obviously I've seen you guys have some competition out there. They don't compare to you guys, but in your mind, I wanted to hear what you had to say about people competing with you. How do you look at that? Do you just not even pay attention to it? You just do your thing?
I like to say we had competition.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, the way we look, I think we have a very different approach, a very different model than anyone else has come before us who's flamed out or, you know, not been able to deliver quality consistently by investing in our community.
Yeah.
We push as much of that money onto the community as possible. We want to create an environment where they can do their best work, where they're, you know, they have the latitude to do interesting things for brands. And we, you know, I think our background, we're uniquely positioned to kind of look, we're kind of like, we started out as gold diggers and we wound up being Levi Strauss.
Sure.
Right? So let's just find a way to make everyone's lives a little easier and better in doing it. I think because we're simpatico, I think, with the creatives, I think that just positions us in the right way.
I think with regards to competition, there are obviously businesses that are going to be in your space. We don't spend a lot of time on that. I would think if we fear anything, we fear what hasn't been created yet, maybe what's watching us learning. And I think the best way to, you know, protect yourself against that is hire great people.
Yep.
In our case, build the best creative community and be proactive and always innovating the technology and the product to stay ahead. If you're reactive, you're done.
And have the best intentions.
Yeah. Yeah, and then
that's,
you know, it's just
transparent.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, if the more ingrained and the deeper our bond with the creative community gets, the harder it's going to be to knock us over. And then we're just focused on building a great product and having a great experience for both sides, for the brands and for the creators.
I think the website's really easy to use. I think that's key. But I think another reason why you guys are going to remain number one at this, no one's going to come along, is you've networked a great, I mean, your network's great. Not even just from the companies you're working with, but from the creative talent angle of it. People are putting out some really great stuff. And as you talked about, two Super Bowl commercials. I mean, that's huge.
Awesome.
That's huge. Let me ask you about commercial advertising companies that hate you or what? Are you taking away jobs?
Some of the agencies, you know, especially some of the creative positions in there are obviously put off by it. We have a couple really good working relationships with some agencies. I think they realize that the need for ideas and work is overwhelming, and how are they going to do it? We think the ones, again, who are being proactive are figuring out ways to partner with us.
Yeah.
And tap into communities like this and assets and platforms and leverage off of it. But yeah, I mean, it's a very disruptive business. So, you know,
I think what's interesting though, we look at advertising agencies. They have the same dynamics as Hollywood does, where it's all top heavy. There are people, you know, in the ranks who don't make enough money and do all the work. And we think that actually this is a way to, you know, create more opportunity for people like that. Where it's almost like, hey, we actually look at it like, hey, advertising agencies are like the studio system before Lou Wasserman.
Right,
right. It's like you're a contract player at MGM, and that's all you're going to get to do. But that's the same dynamic as if you're, you know, a creative person at, you know, Y&R or whatever, right?
So what do you guys feel your greatest strength is as a company? And where can people go to learn more about the company? At the website, obviously, Tongle.com.
Yeah.
The frequently asked questions section that pretty much answers everything that you need.
Yeah, I mean, the best part of the business is definitely the creative talent that has amassed as the community. And the process and the technology that lies underneath it, that, you know, you've talked about this kind of iterative multi-phase process. This technology that allows that happen, allows us to be really dynamic in terms of, you know, oh, we can do a radio spot, we can do VO, we can do script. We
do a guitar solo.
Yeah, we can do a guitar solo. So the combination of those two things, the Trident, and we did something for Quaker last week. Those are 24-hour ideation.
Right. I love that idea.
We got 1,000 ideas in 24 hours.
That's great.
The ability to not only capture those, but then have them be evaluated and turned back around. So it's the speed.
Two different TV commercials under a month.
Right.
Normally looking at 9 months or more, plus, you know, God knows how many hours and dollars.
It's just kind of like, we call it like the virtuous cycle, right? So if you have really interesting companies coming with great challenges, paying a lot of, you know, paying good money for it, great talent shows up, they do great work, that builds trust, you get in deeper, more good companies come, they're willing to put more dollars to it, more opportunities, right? And it goes from a few $1,000 and maybe a digital spot to tens of thousands of dollars and a Super Bowl commercial and wide distribution. And that's how it's building on itself, and that's how the creative community is getting bigger and more talented and more global, right? It's growing, you know, in its diversity and its reach. And that's how our client roster is getting bigger and more interesting, and there's more types of opportunities, and it just kind of keeps going around and around and around. And that's
so. Did you guys know from day one though you were going to expand like this, or did you just have the idea that you were going to pitch ideas, pitches, videos, and just let it be that?
I think that was the creative process.
Yeah,
it was idea, development, execution.
Yeah,
right. And so we always wanted to be content agnostic. So literally, that process was designed kind of along the lines of building, you know, television pilots or screenplays.
Yeah, right.
And that's what we took out, and we said, let's just implant that in here, and then it just worked for brands, too.
I love it. Real quickly, your favorite Paul Sorvino movie?
Oh.
The Gambler.
The Gambler, absolutely, yeah. I I got the poster up.
The great Jimmy Toback.
That's right. Got the poster up in my office. There's only one thing hanging up in my office right now. It's that movie poster.
I love it. I love it. That's one of the best movies.
And if we had enough time, I could probably recite Goodfellas with the two of you start to finish. if we had to. So.
We're trying to get a photo op where one of us puts the other one in the oven here and Paul watches. So.
If Caesar can send one of these pictures to my dad right now, he'd be a pretty happy guy.
We'll get you whatever you need. I got to tell you, Tangle.com, I very rarely have businesses on, as we talked about. I don't like promoting things I don't like, so people know I love this, like right out of the gate.
Greatly appreciate it.
This is huge for me. I encourage people to go here because creatively, it's a great outlet, if nothing else. If nothing else, creatively, just let it loose.
Great way to look at it.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be fun.
It is. It is fun.
It's designed to be fun.
I got to tell you, I had no problem using the website, and it was fun. It really was. Doing these Trident things, 140 characters, you're sitting there, you're in the briefs, you're trying to come up with all these ideas. It's just a lot of fun. Real quickly, I before we wrap up, at Tangle.com, of course, and anything else you guys need to add at all?
No, I mean, I think the fun part is where it's at. I mean, I think it's hustle, have fun, and do great creative work. And we're just, it's our mission just to give people access to creative
work. That's great.
Get involved.
I want to remind our listeners, we will be back tomorrow. Tomorrow, Scott Aukerman from IFC, Scott Aukerman Show on IFC, he'll be here, along with Joe Swanberg, the director of Drinking Buddies with Olivia Wilde, Anna Kendrick,
nice.
Ron Livingston, the guy from New Girls, the new girl that I don't know his name, Jack Johnson, that's a singer guy, right? Joe something. Listen, he's on a show, it does things, there's people on it. And then next Wednesday, Allison Hope Wiener's coming on. Allison was a lawyer for Jason Patrick, who lost his child custody battle today. I just heard about it. I don't know if it's even been reported on yet, but Allison will be joining me, and we'll have more too. So tomorrow, definitely tune in. James, Rob, I want to thank you guys for coming on so much,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm glad to be here on my special day with Paul and Renee. And David,
pleasure,
director of Paul's new film. You got to see this film. Last I heard, it's fantastic. Holly Shorts. You can go to www.thematthewearnshow.com. Go to the event, click on it, and you can order up tickets for Thursday's premiere of Last I Heard at Holly Shorts. David Rodriguez is here now. It's great to see David. So thank you guys very much. Tangle.com. And then anything else you need to plug? 603 North Hollywood Way, Tay, Chicago. Thank you, Arlene and Joe Montaigne. Thank you, Joe, for stopping in, seeing Paul. Joe looks great. And we'll be back tomorrow. Thanks, you guys. All right.